Thank you, choir, for that uplifting word. I hope you were reading along and maybe even singing along with them. You can, you know. And it was a great moment in our worship. Thank you so much for the work that you all do every week getting ready for our services. We appreciate it. Verse 105 from Psalm 119 is the theme verse our Lighting God's Path group has chosen for our church's future plan. There was no shortage of discussion about which verse that ought to be chosen. We looked at a variety of verses. Several of them could have been strong choices, but this one stood out. And it's been the through theme, as you've picked up on by now, for our entire worship service, including the opening choral number, which taught us what I'm told is a new hymn for you all, "Thy Word is a Lamp." It's actually, by the way, if you're 35 years or under, the song is older than you, so it's not a new song. But it may be new to this congregation, and thank you so much for singing it as vigorously as you did. Yeah, the longer this group, the Lighting God's Path group, worked at their task, the more this one verse seemed to capture their job, to gather information from you, to gather information from the leaders in our area, and to peel back the layers until we had a plan that would help us to shed light on God's path. It was important to them that we discover what seemed to be God's will for us rather than anyone else's plan for any other church. On my first trip to Chicago, which I mentioned to you just a week or so ago, I was eager to see the city's famed Magnificent Mile. I'm sure a lot of you have probably been there. The Magnificent Mile encompasses a 13-block stretch of North Michigan Avenue that runs from the banks of the Chicago River on the south side up to Oak Street on its north. The Magnificent Mile bills itself as a spectacular showcase of style, flavor, entertainment, and fun. This sounds like the end of a game show, doesn't it? Telling about their sponsor. With more than 460 stores, 275 restaurants, and 60 hotels, and unique entertainments and attractions packed and stacked along its length, the Magnificent Mile has an indulgence for every passion and every pocket. Well, Bo and I got fascinated on that trip to ride the Magnificent Mile to see it finally. But we just kept going. We just let the car go right on past that sort of northern boundary, if you will, of that designated part of that street. And what we found, not terribly far past that heralded stretch, was a dark and run-down neighborhood. Same street, Michigan Avenue, but run-down buildings. Street lights out, cracked sidewalks. Just a scary looking place. And we began to say things like, "I hope the car doesn't break down here." You've heard yourself say that before. And I don't have to tell you that that's the way our world generally is too, isn't it? That's how my life generally is. Maybe yours too. I might have a pretty good life overall. I might consider myself blessed in a lot of ways. By some counts, my life has a magnificent mile to it. But I've got a part or two of who I am that aren't on the tour, right? And you do too. They're not, those parts of my life are not curated on my Facebook page. We enjoy a good life at our house, and we enjoy a good life here at our church. But we're not far from people who are suffering. And truth be known, they're not only just right down High Street from us, they're among us too in our membership. We have a city of opportunity and need just outside and inside our doors. You can turn out from our front door and drive up High Street. And it's beautiful. You pass the park with the towering magnolia and the manicured lawn and the people who are letting their dogs play inside the wrought iron fence. It's beautiful. You pass the cemetery and there are streets of beautiful homes and manicured lawns. That's what you can see just up the street from our church. But you could turn out another way and find a world that we don't know real well without going very far. Right now, there's someone here who just can't hear me. They're not listening to me because all they can think about are the glory days when our building was full and we had youth and children all over the place. Some of you are those children and some of you were the parents of those children. And so there's someone here today who can't hear much that I'm saying, really any week that I'm up here. Because Sunday after Sunday they sit here in pain, thinking about all that used to be and fascinated to think about what it would take to get those days back. They hear that out a little ways in one direction, there's a church that must surely be the Magnificent Mile, because they hear that this congregation is brimming with young people, and they've heard that out across the country, there's another church that's doing pretty well too with younger folks. That's what they want for us. Now, they haven't ventured out to those places to actually see what they do, to realize if we became what those churches are, if we did what those churches do, they might not stick around here very long because it wouldn't be for them. If we're being honest, that they and a lot of their friends wouldn't turn the corner with us if we did what some churches do. And those churches are doing a great job of that, and they're doing what they were built brand new to be. No, some folks won't hear much of what I have to say today. And when the Lighting God's Path team presents its report, some of you will flip it open and turn past all the other pages in search of the ones with the magic answers to bring back the glory days, or in search of what idea that you may have suggested to see if it made the plan. And I hope that all of us, though, will count ourselves on board for what is ahead, for a revitalized and clear chance to live into the next several years, feeling like we have purpose and intent, feeling like we have a plan that reflects the best of God's hopes for us, and as we can understand them at least and discern them. We want someone, anyone, to light up God's path for us as a church. And with your help, that's exactly what the team is working to do. To put together a plan that will encompass the best of what we believe is good and healthy about us, and to put together a realistic plan that captures what our congregation as a whole feels convicted about and what our city needs from a church that still has a lot of human and financial resources for God to use. A church that still feels that if God lays a hand on its collective shoulder and issues a call to ministry and mission in Franklin and beyond, then it should be a church that is ready to get to work. It's going to be scary, though, because there are no guarantees that your favorite part of this plan or my favorite part of this plan will contain the magic answers. At my last church, we had some older folks who were convinced they had all the answers for reaching those elusive young people. And I know some of you put on your dream lists in this process that you'd like for us to have more young people. And I agree with you. My dream would be that this place would be teeming with youth and children and their parents and young adults. And we're going to work at that. But these guys at a church I served would write up their ideas and bless their hearts. All they were really doing was taking a trip down memory lane to what churches were doing back in their younger days. Theme days and festivals and the like. Splashy events and programs with catchy names that people will come to in large numbers, but they'll disappear the next week. It doesn't engage them into the life of your church most of the time. Sports leagues and things that churches with a lot of predominantly older folks would have a hard time, an awful hard time pulling off and sustaining, don't you think? But all that was lost on them because they figured someone, you remember last week, someone? They figured someone should be doing those things and all would be well. A younger member in that church pulled me aside one day, having read the latest of the letters that had floated in with all the ideas on it. And he said, if we listen to these guys and 1959 ever does roll back around, we're going to be ready. One of my favorite articles recently was written by a young millennial generation adult. And first of all, on behalf of folks his age, he begged for churches to stop targeting them and to stop worshiping them as the fix-all for their future. Because it all comes off so desperate, so transparent, and he rightly pointed out that desperation doesn't sell. Authenticity does. Substance sells. Purpose and hands-on ministry is appealing. Health and love in a church community is appealing. His generation wants to do something that matters, and he begged the church to give them a chance. But don't try, he said, to be something you aren't, because that's too fake to stand a chance. And I appreciated his words, because we all long for the magic answer. But on balance, what he said that was appealing was a church that loves, a church that understands who it is, a church that is faithful to God's call to ministry and to mission, and that has not sold out due to fear into things they can't be good at. Bill Wilson, our consultant, has sounded a similar note and has reminded us steadily that authenticity and missional purpose is more attractive to younger folks these days than any show we could try to put on. I will no doubt feel as in the dark as you will about some parts of the plan. And none of it will have the elusive magic answers. No guarantees. That's going to be the scary part. So in the end, the best thing we can do is what this verse captures that you've been hearing and singing today. The best thing we can do is to shine a light on God's path. Try to illuminate what God seems to be calling us to be. Not the church across the way. Not the church out there that was built from scratch to be some very specific things that we would have a hard time becoming, but within the authenticity of who we are, being the most useful version of ourselves that we can present to God and that we can use to follow God's kingdom path. That is the only plan that is likely to keep us together and take us where we need to be. Understandably, we just wish we knew more about what this is going to look like, and I think we will very soon. We want to know what somebody will ask us to do, and that's going to come all too soon. We want to know how it's going to work, and we want to know what the results are going to be. On vacation every year, I usually end up trying to do something that stretches me a little. Not reckless things, although my dear mother would think they're reckless, but things that take me out of my comfort zone. On Facebook, some of you have seen the pictures that have resulted from some of these vacation adventures. Like me in 2007 holding a young alligator in my arms. That was different. Or posing with a parrot on my head, that's easy enough, while I was holding an iguana in my hands. Another year, I got the chance to hand feed a group of about a dozen iguana as they just crawled up right in front of me, and I held a piece of lettuce out for them. That was different. Elizabeth and I snorkeled with about 60 stingrays one time, some of them just swirling around in the water, and they were the size of a small car hood. That was different. Took me out of my comfort zone. One summer, a long time ago, I rappelled off a 95-foot cliff. My mother has not gotten over that one yet. One year, I climbed a rock wall at sea. I had never climbed a rock wall anywhere in my life, let alone one whose bottom was on the 14th deck of a cruise ship. And by the time I reached the top, I was 20 stories above the ocean floor. And that was a singular experience, looking all around and taking in the view before I finally tapped the bell at the top, which signaled them to ease me down by the cables. and it's an experience I wouldn't take anything for. I have ridden 3 laps around Daytona International Speedway in a NASCAR at 165 miles an hour. I laughed all the way around the track, and you'd have to know I'm not a NASCAR fan. I don't go to races. But I would do that one again tomorrow. It was fun. I think the one that was the hardest for me to do was the time that I ziplined up high. Even though you're all harnessed in and you got a helmet on, and I'm not sure what a helmet's going to do at 10 stories above deck, but you got a helmet on, you got your harnessed in, and you're standing on a platform, and the platform you're standing on is a perfectly fine place, and yet to zip line you have to step off the platform into nothingness. And that's what was so tough to do, and so tough, so counterintuitive to make myself do it. Now, once I finally did, I did it 2 or 3 more times. The ride was exhilarating. The view was incredible. The landing was fine. They told me what to do when I reached the end, and everything went just like they told me it would. Turns out the hardest part was trusting every rational thing that they had shown me and explained to me, and taking the first step. I think life is a lot like that. I think church is a lot like that. I think following the plan that will emerge from lighting God's path will be a lot like that. Some of it will not make sense. Some of it won't be exactly what we've been hoping for. Some of it we just won't be able to see as much certainty about to want to trust it. There's a beautiful old story about a father and a son. And the son had reached about the age of 10 or 11, and the father sensed in general that it was time to teach him a little more about independence and about solving problems for himself. And so one dark night, the power went out for miles around. The house was dark, and the son had grown accustomed to his dad just taking care of things like this. And the dad said to his son that night, "Hey, we've got a lantern out in the shed. Why don't you go get it?" "Well, it's dark out there, Dad. I can't even see the shed. I'm scared." And there was only the dim, pale light of a distant moon, much like last night's outside if you were there. "What can you see out the back door?" the father asked. And the boy replied, "I see the patio." "Good. Well, go out onto the patio and go as far as you can see. Start by going out to the edge of the patio that you said you could see." And he waited, and then he said, "What can you see now, son?" And the boy said, "Well, from here, I can just make out the swing set." And the dad replied, "Well, fantastic. Go over to the swing set then. Now what do you see?" And the boy said, I think I see the clothesline." And the father said, "Well, good. Walk over to that then. Now what do you see?" And the boy said, "Well, now that I'm here, that's got to be the shade tree. Let me guess. You want me to walk over to the shade tree?" And the father said, "That's exactly what I want you to do. Just go to the shade tree." And the dad said, "Okay, what do you see?" And the boy said, "Dad, I see the shed. Now what do I do?" The father said, "Well, reach inside the door, get the lantern, you know where it is, you know the matches are next to it, you've seen it 1,000 times. And once you do that, light the lantern. Light the lantern, and when you light it, you can walk around anywhere you want to go. Going as far as we can see. And then seeing how far we can go." I think that's the life of faith. It's also the life of the church. It's our calling. And the voice of the Spirit yearns to lead us one step where it needs us to go. And then it'll give us the opportunity to see what else we can see and where it wants us to go next. God's path is there for us to follow. And your team is working hard to try to help you shine a light on that path. We just can't see as much of it as we would like when we end up having to take that first step. But the path is there. And a lot of people before us have trusted and have walked God's path before. And again, in this chapter of our lives, it's time for us to do the same. It's time for us to step out, go as far as we can see, and then we're going to do what faith requires. We're going to have to leave it to God to show us how far we can go. Our hymn of response is missing.